Earlier this week, President Obama commuted the sentences of 111 inmates. He had 325 commutations in August alone, part of a move to reform the justice system. The U.S. imprisons more people than any other country, 2 million, and 60% go back to prison after release. So should the U.S., which invented the modern-day prison, now look to other countries? In Rwanda, children of slaughtered Tutsis meet their Hutu killers in prison to hear their amends. In Bangkok, there's a ban on female prisoners being shackled during childbirth, something only 7 American states have. In Norway, the boatman shuttling you to the prison is a prisoner, training to have skills when he leaves. Boz Dreisinger toured the world's prisons for her book Incarceration Nations. She's an associate professor of English at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York, the founder of the Prison to College Pipeline Program, educating prisoners who are then guaranteed a slot at City University upon release. When we spoke earlier this year, I asked her to start with Rwanda's Reconciliation Prison Program.
So I started in Rwanda because I wanted to start any conversation about justice with the victims and not only focusing on the offenders, as we tend to do in our punishment-obsessed system. So I went to Rwanda and I worked with young genocide survivors who were interested in visiting prisons as a gesture of peace and a gesture of reconciliation. And while I was there, I grappled with this legacy of the enormity of this crime and how Rwanda came back from it and the system that it erected to deal with this that transcended just a punishment-obsessed one.
It was pretty incredible because most of the people in the prisons are the people who did the massacring. And here you are with the genocide survivors who wanted to interact with them, which in and of itself was just incredible. And then what happened when they did?
It was a miraculous thing to witness. They found an incredible healing in the time that they spent in prison. They were excited about being part of a reconciliation effort. And while no system is perfect, what I definitely saw was what can happen when healing is the focus of a justice system as opposed to punishment and revenge and anger.
This is where you open up a personal vein for the reader, because you talk about your grandfather who lost his entire family in Hungary during the Holocaust. And you had grown up, as many do, when there's just a horrendous rupture in the family with a rigid kind of it will never happen again, which you balked at. It wasn't as healing as what you saw when you saw forgiveness.
Absolutely not. I think what it is that I felt that I grew up around a lot of bitterness and pain and hurt, and all of that is understandable. These are atrocities. We're talking about human atrocities. But what I encountered in Rwanda from the students that I worked with, from the people that I met randomly and talked to about their experiences, was that there was such a focus on thinking past this, and not necessarily, I mean, you can't mandate forgiveness, and forgiveness is a very, very complex thing. So I actually prefer the words sort of healing and reparations and restoration around wrongs. But I found it incredibly inspiring. And I thought, well, it would have been a beautiful thing to grow up with that culture and with those mantras, as opposed to some of the bitterness and rage, which, again, are understandable, but not so productive and certainly not conducive to healing traumas.
How do you address the person who says people who have committed, you know, serious crimes need to be put away forever? I'm not interested in rehabilitating them. I'm not interested in forgiving them.
Well, I would say a couple things. For one, we need to rethink our assumptions around what victims want and what benefits victims. I think our axiomatic response is victims want revenge and victims benefit from revenge and benefit from the prison system. But in fact, there are lots of studies that show that that's not actually the case. The other thing I would say is that restorative justice already exists in our system. So we're already using this model. We're just using it on a very minimal scale. And so what I would say is, why don't we think about doing this more front and center as opposed to on the fringes and every now and then?
Let's take a look at what you found in Thailand. 90% of the women behind bars in that country face drug charges. And this whole idea of reforming prisons was one of Thailand's princess's pet projects. This is a fascinating chapter in the book. She spearheaded a UN initiative on the treatment of female prisoners, and you were given a tour of one of the women's prisons. You met with the princess in an elaborate ceremony. Tell us a little bit about what you saw in this facility.
So the princess is creating throughout Thailand. She's very invested in creating what she calls these model women's prisons. Women are the fastest growing segment of the prison population globally. And she recognized this, and she also recognized that so many women are in prison because of co-defendants who are usually men, and that they have special needs as women, as incarcerated women, and they're facing special particular struggles. So she's trying to create an environment that is conducive to healing, that's conducive to creating a kind of quasi-family. She created nurseries, there's yoga classes, and it's certainly quite different from the extremes of what some of the other prisons look like in Thailand.
You took a look at private prisons in Australia. You came in with maybe the thinking that private prisons equal bad because they're just about making money off the backs of a country's saddest individuals. But then you had this moment where you think, well, wait, maybe they're not. Tell us about Wan Du.
So, I mean, for the record, private prisons as they stand right now are evil in the sense that it's all about bottom lines and keeping beds filled. And we give these companies enormous power. And that all is very frightening. But what I saw in Australia was the way that in many ways, private companies can innovate in ways that public companies cannot and can get through bureaucratic red tape much more quickly and therefore create some pretty progressive structures. So Wan Du is a prison for young adult men in Australia. They're between 18 and 21. And so they're young enough to be very vulnerable as a population and impacted by older fellow incarcerated people. But at the same time, they are technically old enough to be in adult prisons. But this is an open prison facility, which means that the incarcerated young men can go and come. They have work release. They're involved in community engagement efforts. It's run entirely on restorative principles. I came back there thinking, wow, so many of my students in this country could potentially have been eligible to go to a place like Wan Du if we had such a thing in this country. But instead, they were placed in maximum security adult prisons where they were traumatized and then further traumatized by the reentry that comes after that.
What did you find about solitary confinement?
I went to a federal supermax in Brazil where the men there are all held in solitary for 23 hours a day. And it was absolutely terrifying. I saw people flagrantly going mad before my eyes. It was traumatizing to witness. I had the opportunity to be in a classroom with some of them and talk to them about their experiences in life and what led them to prison. And in many ways, the most frightening piece of that is that it's a supermax very much modeled after the U.S. model of supermaxes. And that model is proliferating all over the world.
You remind us that the supermax was supposed to be a solution to gangs because gangs were proliferating in prisons. But then did, in fact, supermaxes stop the growth of gangs?
No. I mean, prisons don't stop the growth of gangs. I think we know this. And there are so many studies that show that, in fact, they promote gang activity.
And some officials like that because you let the gang run the prison.
It's less work for us. And also the politicians like it because it makes them look good. I mean, the tough on crime is a popular stance, not just here, but around the world. The problem is that prisons don't make us safer. And until we unhinge that notion, they're going to keep doing this.
Norway was the last country you visited. It's one of the safest in the world. The prison system is based on what's called principles of normality, the value of a community over self. Treat them like human beings and they will act like human beings. Treat people like dirt and they will be dirt. Again, to some people, this will sound so touchy-feely.
What's so incredible about what I encountered in Norway is that there is, and no society is perfect, there are no utopias, but there's certainly a communitarian spirit in which people recognize that it's not an us and them thing. It's not those people in prison and those evil criminals, but rather we're in this together and we all need to deal with this together. And so the way they're treated in prison, not all of them, again, but there is a tradition throughout Scandinavia of these open prisons where people can go and come and be still engaged in the community, part of the community, work. And then all of that communitarian spirit extends to what happens when people go home.
So, Boz Dreisinger, there's so much here. I mean, we've talked about forgiveness and treating people like human beings so that they are human beings when they come out of prison and training them for jobs so that they have work possibilities when they come out. What is the one thing that you would say you would like to see adapted by American prisons?
I'd like us to rethink our compulsive and, I would say, obsessive commitment to punishment over and above repair and reparations. I think we need to start thinking about not just alternatives to incarceration, but an altogether different paradigm for thinking about crime, thinking about safety, thinking about what justice looks like. I just would like for it to not be a knee-jerk reaction that crime means doing the time.
That's Boz Dreisinger, Associate Professor of English at John Jay College, founder and academic director of the Prison to College Pipeline Program, sends prisoners to college, just as it says, author of Incarceration Nations, A Journey to Justice in Prisons Around the World. Boz, thanks so much.
Thank you.